So here we go, talking about the Christ and what it means to be a follower of Jesus in this world. And this is going to be a little bit of a different kind of message today. We're going to make sure everybody leaves with something that you can do, very tangible, as a witness to the resurrection, actually. Because the whole New Testament is really the story about Jesus' resurrection. If you take away the birth stories and Christmas, you lose this much of the New Testament. If you take away the resurrection, you lose the rest of it. And so when we talk about a radical, and if we talk about a renegade Jesus, it's this guy who just won't comply with the rules, including the rules that once you're dead, you're dead. And he won't even comply with that rule. I mean, this guy is just a rabble-rouser, and just was owly to cooperate, and just refused it time and time again. In the New Testament, we have all kinds of passages that remind us that it's all about the resurrection. Let's go to the next slide. For example, this Jesus God raised up and all of us are witnesses to that. That's in the second chapter of Acts. Now, if you remember the second chapter of Acts, it's a story about Pentecost and the giving of the Spirit. And then Peter gave this wonderful sermon that converted thousands of people. But he said the whole basis of that, and this is toward the end of the second chapter of Acts, the whole basis of that sermon was that Jesus is resurrected. And so you take away the resurrection, Peter has nothing to say. You go on to the third chapter of Acts, and you get this story that Peter and John are busy in their ministry. And so people brought to him, it reminds us a lot of the story of when they brought a lame man in the second chapter of Mark, and they brought him to Jesus. But now they're bringing it, and you know, consider this: what kind of power do we have in us that, as Melinda was just talking about? So this man, lame from birth, was being carried, and he fixed his attention on Peter and John, expecting to receive something from them, because people born lame from birth were beggars. And they lived by what people would give to them. But Peter said to him, "I have no silver or gold, but what I have I give you. In the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, stand up and walk." And the guy stood up and walked. Okay, now that's the third, and that whole chapter really is that story, and you can look up that yourself. Now you go to the fourth chapter of Acts. Are you getting the hang of this yet? The Sadducees came, much annoyed because Peter and John were teaching the people and proclaiming that in Jesus there is resurrection from the dead. So they arrested him. Okay, so if you're going to be a follower of this renegade, rabble-rousing Jesus, you're going to have some kind of message about resurrection and that people are not confined to who they will be by who they have been. That's the bottom line of this whole thing about resurrection. So so you should be getting the hang here. The book of Acts doesn't have anything to say if you take away the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And in fact, you go on in the book of Acts, Paul is on trial before Festus. Let's go to the next slide. Paul was in Athens. This is the 17th chapter. He argued in the synagogue with the Jews, the devout persons. And it says in there, this was because he was telling the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. Go to the next slide. Okay, we can go back one. So, if you take out the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the New Testament, you don't have anything left, and we don't have anything to do and nothing to say. But in fact, we have some ability to effect resurrection and to give people a spirit of resurrection in how we live. Now, we're going to make this pretty concrete today, okay? I hope that's okay. I hope you came for something pretty concrete, because that's what we're going to do. Now, let's go to the next slide. Have you ever heard of an ace? And it's not a pitcher who does a no-hitter, okay? What does ACE mean? Adverse childhood experiences, as it's said up there. And this is something that we all know about. And in fact, if you're about my age, when you were a kid, you might have heard the statement that you could just blame it on your parents, okay? My parents made me this way, or my parents did this, and now I'm this way, and that sort of thing. And so there was that created some animosity. But the fact is that now that I'm 26, we know more about the brain than we did when I was 21. Yeah? Okay, so now we know, and there's tests that they can identify the synapses that are put together in our brains. Okay? And they know that it actually makes a difference in how our brain is put together. They call it the architecture of the brain. It actually makes a difference in how our brain is put together. We know, for example, too, and it's kind of interesting. I was at a workshop for preachers at Vermeer Corporation in Pella about 2 years ago. Peter Steinke was there, and he talked about this whole brain architecture thing, and he said, "I have no idea why churches are not more concerned about this." That's you and me. We're one of the places where we can make a tremendous impact on kids. And he said, "Why isn't the church doing this?" Because if we talk about resurrection, we have some things that we can offer that are pretty tangible and very concrete. Okay, so ACES 360 is the Iowa organization and group. That's the website on the bottom, and I put it on a lot of slides. If you want to write that down, or otherwise if you want to remember it, that's fine. But Adverse Child Experiences 360 Iowa, and a lot of this information comes from there. And so let's go to the next slide then. So one of the things they did, and this was a study, and it was not of poverty people. This was of people who were they were middle class. They all had insurance, and in fact, it's an insurance company that did the original study. And they said, "Well, let's do a risk assessment." And so they took the information from their survey and they made a risk assessment. Now that does not mean that if you have any of these markers in your past, that you're going to for sure have some kind of a hitch in your get-along as an adult, okay? It's kind of like when you do those heart risk assessments. I don't know if you've ever done those. You know, they ask, have you smoked? Do you exercise? What kind of work environment have you been in your whole life long and all that? Do your parents have some kind of heart history and all that? It doesn't mean that you're guaranteed to have heart problems if you get a high score on that risk assessment, but it does suggest that you might have some tendencies or a risk factor in that. Now, so they made this 10-point risk assessment. Now, if you were going to do this in an inner city, it might be different, or in a real racially diverse group, there, you know, experiencing some things of that sort might be. But they kept it to 10 because they wanted it to be very accessible to people. Now, I picked some of the questions on the ACE risk assessment I'm not including some of those that are more difficult, like sexual abuse and that sort of thing. But of course, those are on there too. Did a parent or other adult in the household often or very often swear at you, insult you, or put you down, or humiliate you, or act in a way that made you afraid that you might get physically hurt? Okay, and then if that's a yes, you put a mark over in the right-hand column. And then another one is, next slide. Did you often or very often feel that no one in your family loved you or thought you were important or special, or your family didn't look out for one another? In other words, you kind of raised yourself. You didn't feel close to each other. You didn't support one another. If that's the case for you, you would put a mark over in the right-hand column. Or this one. Did you often or very often feel that you didn't have enough to eat or had dirty clothes or no one to protect you or your parents were too drunk or high to take care of you or take you to the doctor if you needed it? And you'd put a mark over in the right-hand column. Or here's another one. Was a biological parent ever lost to you through divorce, abandonment, or other reason? That would be one of those reasons why we, as a family of faith, we would really encourage people to do everything possible to stay in there with the biological family, and that's not to say that it's always going to be possible, but But let's do everything we can to keep that family, that biological nuclear family, together, because that's a huge factor in this. Or the next one, did you live with anyone who was a problem drinker, alcoholic, or used street drugs? The percentage on that, of the people who said yes on the original survey was 27%. Iowa is slightly higher than that, however. And that's not a very good comment about Iowa, necessarily. And I think that might be all that I have of those questions. And I, as I said, there are 10 of them. And so, but anyway, if you have a score on that, you see, you've lived in a world that is unnatural. Okay? And so let's go to that next slide there. Christopher, thank you. So if you have a score on that, you've lived in a turbulent world. Now, I'm told, and psychologists suggest, that we are wired for about 20 minutes of danger. And that's normal. And we can experience 20 minutes of danger, and then we can recover from that, and it doesn't affect those how our brain architecture is put together. But over 20 minutes, in other words, if you're living in a home where those experiences are prolonged, it varies your brain. Now, instead of being healthy, you're edgy. You're always waiting for the next shoe to fall, figuratively speaking. You can't relax as easily. You watch your back, so to speak. And so you're different after if it's a prolonged exposure to that kind of a world. Now, in that kind of a world, your brain is wired to just survive. Now, if your brain is wired to just survive, how can we be aware of the people around us? How can we share? How can we be open and vulnerable? Because love means risk, means vulnerability. You can't. You can't love if you cannot experience vulnerability, you see. Now, if you've been in a fairly normal situation, whatever, or less violent, with fewer risk factors, then your brain is wired for a benevolent world, a good world. And it's interesting that then, when you are in danger, you're most vulnerable when it's not a benevolent world, because you haven't had the experience, you haven't developed the work and resiliency to deal with that. So anyway, but your brain is wired to thrive, and to thrive means to share and to be immersed in other people's activities and the challenges of the world and life, and so to experience joy as well. Okay, and so it is very important that we understand adverse childhood experiences and their effect on us. But what I'm going to propose is that we can have a lot to do with that, one person at a time, right here in this room, because I'm thinking that you're all nice people. We've already confessed. We did our prayer of confession right away at the top of the service. We're not perfect people, but I think you're nice people. Okay? And make an appointment if you want to differ with me on that. We don't want to get into it here. But anyway, so the idea is that connections matter. Now, this is one of the, and that's not mine. It's a trademark over there. You can barely see it above the R on matter. But this is off of the ACEs website as well. The pretty at the top. I'm not pretty. I'm just black and white. And so those are my comments. But there are core protective systems that can help people succeed and thrive in spite of their backgrounds, okay? And they will not, so the core protective systems won't prevent adversity in our life. It doesn't mean that you're going to live in a bubble. They provide inoculation and resiliency and positive, helpful coping skills for life. Just life. Now, one of them is capabilities. One of the core protective systems, is capabilities. This is a huge mark right here. 80% of our brain architecture is determined in the first 3 years of life. Okay, now this is relatively new stuff. We still know very little about the brain and how it works. But the first 3 years of life. And so, like when Kingston had his little solo during the prayer there, I don't know if anybody else noticed it. I loved it. His brain is being put together in times of silence, in times of music, in times of prayer, whatever it is. His brain is being put together, one connection with another. It's being formed. Is it okay if you don't have your child in worship and he's in the nursery, he or she is in the nursery? Sure, but I think every experience is important in putting the brain together. Isn't it ironic that one of our tasks, okay, just a little bit of a side note here. I don't have it in my notes and I wasn't going to say anything, but isn't it interesting that we have a hard time finding people to be in the nursery to spend time with children who are 0 to 3 years old? Because in that place, you are doing the most important thing you can do. You're putting a kid's brain together. Isn't that amazing? You're putting a kid's brain together. Or if you spend time with your grandchildren, neighbor's grandchildren, or those yet to be born, you're putting a kid's brain together. That's why we read, anymore they say, read to your child before it's born. Do you do that? Yeah? Yeah? Read to your child, when it's very young, because the brain is being put together. It is being formed for its lifetime at that point. Can you or I help somebody in that context? I think every person here has an ability and some kind of skill to help put a kid's brain together. Because all you have to do is be present and to love and not be a danger. Okay, so anyway, core protective system, capabilities, positive affirmations, the skill of self-regulation. Some kids never see that. They have nobody modeling self-regulation. I believe most of you here today could do that. You could model self-regulation for a child. The ability and knowledge that I can do things myself. Giving a kid tasks and chores. Today in Sunday school, we happen to talk about that a little bit. And the kids were talking about some of the chores they do. And that's important. I can do this. Okay, let's go to the next one. The next core protective system is attachment and belonging. In other words, relationships. We can have relationships. We don't have to be related to one another to have a relationship. But it's important that the relationship be with caring and competent people, and the more the better. A few years ago, Heidi and Jane and I went to a workshop up in Waterloo. You don't remember that, do you? You do. Now I'm going to see if this thing works. I'm going to put you right on the spot. What was that about?
It slipped my mind now.
What was that about?
What was it about?
Yeah.
It was about youth leadership.
Youth leadership, and this guy was in a church, and he said what?
A lot of things.
A lot of things. And what did they do for their youth to give them some stability?
Well, that was the I don't remember the exact ratio, the 4-on-1 or the 5-on-1.
Exactly. She was there and she listened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
We've talked about. How many years ago did we
exactly.
go?
Exactly. And we got to get it off dead center.
Get off of square one.
Yep. Okay. So he said, every adult is responsible to make a connection with one of the kids in that church every Sunday and to keep track of the kid, not to be at every one of their events, but to be that person who says you did a good job at that concert at school or that ball game and that sort of thing. Every adult can do that, regardless of how young or old we are. And so, they had some kind of 4-to-1 or 3-to-1 ratio, something like that, so that every kid had three adults in that church. And if those adults were asked to write down the name of their three kids, they needed to be able to do it. Because what we represent can change a world. Not only very young kids, but all the way up. Connections, relationships. Not every kid has healthy, helpful, positive relationships. We assume that. You know, one of the stories that I heard lately, and I believe the gal said she grew up in Olwine. Some of you know where Olwine is. She had a neighbor who, in the 1980s, he was a single guy, but he was on the school board, okay? And this guy in the 80s, before alternative schools were really all that popular, this guy said, we need to start an alternative school. And the people said, oh, no, no, no. And he kept at it and kept at it until Olwine started their own alternative school. And you know what his reason was? His reason was that we can never give up on a kid because the valedictorians will make it and they will go out and get an education and they will leave. And the people who are in charge of this community after they leave are the people we need to reach. Prophetic. Very prophetic. And so anyway, relationships are so important. We can never give up on a kid regardless of how old they are, but those first 3 years are huge. And then the other core protective system is this. Community, culture, spirituality. Just the whole system in which that child is being nurtured and raised, and the models that they're given, and the love they're shown and experience to be part of something bigger than even one's family. That this isn't our whole world when we close the door in our house. That it's bigger out there. To have a spiritual foundation that provides a setting to always have hope is so big so that they don't say, oh man, I'm done. This is too much. Have you heard anything yet that maybe you can say, you know what, I have a little bit of responsibility here. We each do. We each do. Don't underestimate the amount of time and effort you spend with neighbor children, with other children in the church, whether it's teaching or your formal settings or informal settings. We have a lot of kids that just feel ignored in the world. And that is not good. That's not getting their brain put together properly. So, our purpose is to make disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. And I'm going to propose this, that it begins with the transformation of one person at a time. And that's why you and I are here. That the world is going to stay the same if you and I do. If the people around us stay the same, the world isn't going to be transformed. We have to become the renegade of the one we follow. What difference would it make if every child connected to this church had three adults unrelated to them who made it a point to find them every Sunday? Who stood with the parents outside those Sunday school rooms? Said, hey, what have you done this week? Or before, we really had a job trying to find people just to greet at the door, at the breezeway door at the beginning of Sunday school, because, you know, it can be a zoo and kids and the parents. And even to make connections with those parents and to know that, parents, I'm here to help you. Next one. What difference would it make if every adult connected to this church had at least one child unrelated to them who needed you to be present to give them affirmation every Sunday? And I'm not sure how that's different than the previous one, I think. But anyway, let's go to the next one. And it all comes. James summarized our response to the resurrection. James just said, what good is it if you know that you have the ability to make a difference in a person's life, you have the wherewithal to make a person a change and a difference in a person's life, you have the smarts, and we all have time, if we prioritize. We all have time to make a difference in a kid's life. What then is it if we don't do it? Because faith and following the renegade is worthless if we don't do anything about it, if we don't do anything with it. It's dead. So, here's one thing that we're going to do moving forward. And I was hoping I could get this set up before today, but I wasn't able to because it takes a bigger brain than mine. But we are going to have a workshop called Connections Matter. And we're going to put that out, and we're going to invite everybody that's part of the church to that. And when you see Connections Matter, that means it's you that's invited, because you are a connection that's important for the children of this community from birth all the way up. By the way, the ACE events, those adverse childhood experiences, they are suggesting that those still have an effect on us up to age 26. That the formation, the experiencing of those, now they would have an effect on us. Our response to those is the rest of our life. But those events up to age 26 are still forming us. So anyway, now, connections matter. And that's you and me. Because the world will be transformed by the power of the renegade if one at a time we are transformed and become God's willing agents in the world. Now, I want you to think right now of one kid, one family, one kid that you either have and are still making a difference in, or that you can. Let's pray. God, give us the courage to be that presence, that non-judgmental, loving presence that is so sorely needed in this world. We don't like the idea that you have placed the power and spirit of resurrection in us. We would like to just say, you do it. You do it, and leave me out of it. But that is not how you have chosen to work in the world. So use us. Use us. Use me. Use me. Amen.